Welcome to the Supercoach Champions podcast with your hosts, Wilfred Z, Joe Fitz, and other Supercoach champions.
Welcome back to the Supercoach Champions podcast. You're here with Catfish. I'm joined tonight not by Joe Fitz. He's dead to me this week. He's just going so shockingly I had to drop him. No, the poor guy's crook as, so giving him the night off. Thankfully, I've got 2022 overall champion Matty White jumping on with me instead, which is even better, let's face it. Matty, how's it going?
Yeah, look, I'm glad you threw that in, Wilf. In terms of an upgrade, I think you found one. But look, I'm going okay. Very small green arrows in the Supercoach world this week. I was, it was a bad week watching until up Cronulla came good for me. But we build again. And it's still only so early, right? Like, what did we just finish round four? There's still so long to go.
Absolutely. Now, look, let's just, you hinted at some tiny green arrows. And I'm right there with you. You know, traveling really poorly when you can score 971 and you still get green arrows because you're ranked so bad. So I've managed to move up 4,000 ranks to going a 971. So yeah, let's face it, it's not a good start for me. But hey, any green's a win, right? So Joe had a slightly better round, 990 for him. He's still, having said that, still trailing me. How did you go in the end?
I broke the 1,000, so I got up to 1,007. I said it was not looking good until I had Nico, Mulitalo, and Hiro all go 80 plus. So, yeah, that sort of saved me there and went up 2,000 spots.
Yeah, very nice. And I can't believe you have Kyle Hiro already. You just got in early. Oh, well. Hope for your sake he stays in the starting lineup next round, or not this week, obviously, but after the bye. But, yeah, that's quite a win. Look, having said that, before we go any further, one thing Joe and I have been doing is kind of just addressing what we feel is like a quick chat, but a burning question that's arisen from round four. So for this week, I just wanted to look at this. Well, what the heck do we do with the 5/8 position, right? Let's just face it, it is a dumpster fire of all dumpster fires. We used to describe the hooker position as that, but let's face it, the hookers are flying comparatively to the 5/8s. For me, I've got two suspended 5/8s at the moment. Both of them got into the hip drop action over the weekend. So yeah, Maxi Plath and Lockie Galvin, life's not so good right now, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. But the funny thing is 5/8 position, the highest averaging 5/8 is actually Tommy Dearden with only an average of 63, which I think that sums it up, doesn't it?
Yeah. Look, it does sum it up. I started with Dearden, and as you said, averaging 60. I don't think you can be happy with someone averaging 63 except Tommy Dearden. I haven't looked at making a single trade there. He has been solid. There's been no – I think he's at a low of 51 last week against the Broncos, right? There is nothing anywhere else.
Yeah, and look, let's face it, you know, his base is not the best, but he's been cashing in each week with attacking stats. So, yeah, well done to Tommy. He's playing really well. I mean, the second highest average is Luke Brooks with the 55. Then you get Dillbags. He was my guy. I thought he was going to be the chosen one, but only 54 average. I made the tough call to actually trade him out last week for Auckland Galvin, and I'm actually pretty stoked I did that in the end, despite the suspension. But anyway, that's another story. But then you're Cody Walker, 50 average. Carl Flanagan. Can you believe it? Carl Flanagan has the fifth best average right now, 49.8. And then you're at Luke Metcalf, who's now got a broken leg, and he's out of the picture there. I mean, I skipped over Galvin. He's actually got the second best average at 62.3, but he's only played a couple of games and now suspended. So, yeah, it's dire straits there. So, you know, asking for a friend, what would you do if you had two 5/8s who weren't playing this week?
Yeah, it's tough, right? Like, because where do you trade them to? Maybe I have a biased opinion because I'm actually AEing this week because I don't have a halfback. But I'm keeping them because they're guns, right? It's different than keeping two cheapies.
The thing is, like, you're copping the AE because you'll get Nico back next week, all right, when he's done with his buy. I can't cop 2 weeks of 5/8 AEs, basically, because they're both gone for 2 weeks. So, yeah, look, right now, Maxi Plath, I like the kid, but he's gone. 10 break even. He's got some more cash to make for sure. And, you know, maybe it's something to think about later. I might bring him back. Who knows? But he's going out. Ethan Strange, handy dual position. He's going to go be my 5/8 for a week, hopefully only just a week. But, yeah, he's going to be my 5/8, and Maxi Plath will probably turn into Blaze Talangi. Keeping the cash rolling, but I definitely wasn't planning to make a trade that quickly at 5/8. I was hoping to ride it out for a little bit longer till they both fattened, or at least I got Max Plath out, you know, via his dual position or something like that. But yeah, suspensions obviously put a pin on that one. If you were going to pick someone, I mean, would you recommend people trade in Tom Dearden this week against the Titans? I mean, it's a pretty good matchup, but he's certainly not cheap.
No, he's 620K, and as you say, he's averaging 63, but that's with three tries in four matches. Like, yeah, there's every chance he scores against the Titans because they are poor. But I think the Ethan Strange move isn't the worst move, right? Like, there'll be a lot of people that will be playing Ethan Strange this week in their center wing, and whether you're playing him there or at 5/8, although it looks prettier playing him at center wing, it doesn't make a single difference on the scoreboard. So, look, you can tell your friend. That's probably what I'd be doing.
Yep, that's fair. And, you know, I've heard of people, a few people, like I said, Joe's a crook, but he sent me a cryptic message saying something about Max Plath turning into Cam Munster, and he mentioned he was a bit feverish. So I don't know if it was just the fever talking, or do you think that's just wild talk? Munster coming off an unknown groin injury that ended up keeping him out for 4 weeks. I wouldn't trade him in, right?
No, you're right. If it was a groin, just a typical groin, and they knew he was going to be back in 2 weeks and he came back, but it's like a mystery groin that didn't show up on any scans. Yeah, no, thank you. Not for me.
Yeah, too risky. And it, honestly, there's a few other names that just, it's not very inspiring. I guess I will say Jaden Campbell, you know, to spoil my potential plans for next week. Like, if Ethan Strange does a job for me this week and then Jaden Campbell has another decent game, he might be the guy I trade back in at 5/8, you know, he was a really popular preseason pick. Didn't look too bad first game back. I know the Titans are a dumpster fire, but it doesn't really matter for Supercoach, right? If he's scoring some points, he can make some cash and deliver better than.
Yeah, he'll fit in at 5/8 then, won't he? He'll fit right in.
Yeah, and he's got the dual position, so that worst case scenario, if I need to, he can be flicked to fullback or whatever if there's an injury down there. So anyway, look, I think the depressing nature of that chat probably sums up how things are traveling at 5/8, not just for my team, but for Supercoach generally. Onto more promising things. So we're going to jump over to talk about our $500 champs only bonus leader. It's still Cameron, the coach of Spandickles, who's dropped a little bit, ranked in the 2700s now, but still pacing all the champs. Look, let's just face it. I have a confession to make. Right now, Joe is actually the, of all the champs in our little group, he's the lowest ranked of all of them. And this guy's giving advice to everyone. And I'm only slightly better. I'm fourth last in the group. So look, to be fair, we've very clearly been saying to people, you know, do as we say, not as we do, because yeah, there's only so much you can do for myself, whose team is absolutely cursed. I mean, like, I managed to kill Lockie Galvin, right? I brought him in, scored well, but he's gone for 2 weeks. Yeah, whoever I bring in just seems to die, get injured, suspended, just fall off a cliff. I managed to ruin Taylor May, like, the list goes on. But yeah, let's just say the advice we've been given out, especially in the Discord, seems to be better on the whole than what we're doing for our own team. So anyway, that's enough of that chat. Let's jump over to the news for the week. All right, before we jump into injuries, which is obviously the most important news for the most part, but I wanted to talk a little bit about Zach Lomax. Bit of news dropped today about him. He's renegotiated his contract with the Dragons. He originally had, he's on 800K a season. Originally was going to be there for another 3 years, including this year. Now he's renegotiated. He's apparently going to stay for the rest of 2024, but 25, 26, he's gone. So new team, whatever. And the Dragons, bit of good business for them. They don't have to worry about paying a cent to Lomax to go and play elsewhere. Now, they're saying that there won't be a release for this year unless there's a player swap or some sort of, you know, return for the Dragons that Shane Flanagan likes, basically. So I'm not, that doesn't mean he's not going anywhere. There's some chat still that he consistently keeps getting linked with the Eels, who obviously they need centers and outside backs, but centers in particular. I mean, again, Morgan Harper, let's just leave it at that. But yeah, look, does this make Lomax a bit of a safer bet? Obviously, I've been talking about him for a few weeks now, but I've personally stayed off just because, firstly, you know, bigger fires to put out, but also this constant news has been a little bit, you know, it's bugging me, basically. It makes me a little bit nervous about bringing him in, knowing that he could be suddenly playing center at the Eels and not goal kicking, because let's face it, Lomax isn't ever kicking ahead of Gutho or Moses at this stage. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on Lomax there?
It's interesting. He was he did get looked at for my team this week as well, but it is always hovering, right? Does he? Flano's probably never going to drop him, right? He's probably their best winger. He just doesn't want to be there, and he hasn't want to be there for the first four games, and he's still rolled up his sleeves and done the dirty work. So, look, I think you can almost drop that out of the mind. The one thing that scares me is if he does get a swap, does he walk straight into a team, or does he miss a week, a couple of weeks in sort of the changeover period? It's a 630K guy you got sitting on the pine. As you said, if that's your biggest issue is potentially bringing in Zach Lomax, well, good luck to you. But I wouldn't be considering it right now.
Yeah, and especially this week, the chat is obviously the weather is not great. Let's just put it that way. It could be a bit of a monsoon over in Nui, where the Dragons are playing this week. And then next week, look, they're coming up against the second best defense in the NRL. Of course, that's the West Tigers. That's next round. How weird is 2024, right? Who would have thought we'd be saying that?
That's excellent use of the word, of course. You definitely had me.
Yeah. So, look, let's jump into the injuries then. So, thankfully, after absolute carnage last week, it's not so bad this week, but a few big ones. Jacob Preston, broken jaw, looking at 6 weeks out. And, you know, coupled with Kurt Morin also copping 2 weeks on the sideline for a guilty plea for a dangerous throw. So, look, they've got Josh Carranam to start. They've got a new back rower, Katonga, I think. Again, probably butchering that name, but he's named on the bench. Bit of hype about him, but, yeah, he's been playing a bit of prop as well as edge, so it's unclear what his role might be there. And I guess the other flow-on effect seems to be Sam Hughes, named to start at prop now as well. So what are your thoughts on this injury here? Do you think there's an opportunity? Is Curran, you know, is he a priority if you haven't got him in? Or
I don't know if he's a priority. I wish I had him. I wish I started with him. He was definitely in one of my 6 million iterations. He's not there now. Look, I don't know if he's a keeper, and I don't know if there's huge cash to be generated. So it's an interesting trade-in. I think right now, I know it's still very early, but I'm looking at either cash or keeper status right now. I don't think he's either of those things, so I'm not looking at him. The Sam Hughes thing does make me smile, though, because I was very worried that I was going to get his 14 points as my Nicho Hynes stand-in. Instead, now I might get his 24 points. But, yeah, it's a good thing for Sam Hughes owners anyway.
You just hope he's not the new Farmer Silly, you know, starting prop who plays 20 minutes and that's it, doesn't come back on. But who knows what Serralda's going to do. I tend to think, you know,
really
it gives him a stay of execution in my team. He was at risk of becoming Kai Pierce-Paul this week through duels, and I still might do that anyway. But, yeah, definitely, you know, it's a little bit more promising, let's put it that way. Our next injury here is Alex Johnston, done a hammy. He's gone for about 6 weeks, so it sounds like it's not, you know, like the low end of injuries there. Unfortunately, despite, you know, my prayers and all of that, Jacob Gagai not named as his replacement. And we've got Isaac Thompson coming in instead. Word is he's training on the left wing as well, next to Jack Whiten. So, you know, unfortunately, Thompson not entirely cheap, but if he's got 6 weeks there, I mean, you're not jumping on this week, but at 330K, 331 roughly, you know, that left wing has been gold for a long time. Yeah, and I know the worries aren't great, but there could be some interest there, right, maybe?
Yeah, again, look, there's got to be bigger fires or bigger people. If he was 250K, that'd be great. Or if his name was Jacob Gagai with a minus 55 break even, that'd be even better. But I honestly have not even looked there, so I'd be remiss of me to make a call.
No, that's fair. And Warriors, Sharks, then the bye in round 7, and coming back after the bye to the Storm and the Panthers, definitely not exactly that exciting either. So, yeah, probably move on that one. Next injury is pretty upsetting, honestly. Luke Metcalf was looking really, really good for the Warriors. Unfortunately, fractured his tibia. He's had surgery. The club's saying late season. So, look, we've got Tamari Martin there named as his replacement. There's some chat maybe Harris Tavita might be there as well, although he's been named on the extended bench. So, yeah, like, does this open the door for maybe some interest in Tamari Martin?
Yeah, if it's late season, that's interesting, right? It might be a actual tibia fracture, but Tamari Martin's 363K, and he was really good last year. Started the season killing it. The Warriors are better than they were last year, if anything. Again, that 5'8 is a horrible position, so it'd be a risk to take him this week, but there is probably worse calls you could make.
Definitely one to keep an eye on it at the very least anyway. And again, Supercoach is friendly enough that you get a couple of weeks to have a look before you have to commit by the third game. And then concussion protocol, ruling out a couple of guys here. Adokar, Zach Hosking, Shaq Mitchell, Isaac Liu, and Kurt Capewell, all into the mandatory 11-day stand down. We've mentioned it already, judiciary-wise, we've got obviously Lachie Garvin, Maxi Plath, and Curtis Moran all copping 2 weeks out. And yeah, look, I kind of mentioned this before, but Sam Hughes obviously getting a start. One thing I forgot to highlight, Ryan Sutton, apparently back soon. It's been mentioned somewhere around round 8, and I think they have a round 8 bye. So it may be potentially round 9 that Ryan Sutton's back and available. So, yeah, maybe that Sam Hughes still has a limited shelf life at the end of his haul. But at the very least this week, you got to give him a chance, I think, to see if he gets some decent minutes for once. Who knows?
He hasn't looked bad, right? He's a big dude, and he's been somewhat damaging. He just can't play more than 25 minutes, for goodness sake.
It's really weird, because obviously all the chat in the preseason was that he was a standout, training the house down, and just not getting it done on the field or not earning the minutes or something like that. I don't know. It's a bit of a weird one, isn't it? But yeah, let's go check out our cheapies for this round.
These aren't the cheapies you're looking for.
All right. It is actually a pretty simple week. Firstly, you know, we've been going with the green light, amber light, red light kind of approach with the cheapies. So green light, simple. Blaze Talangi, and that's it. Negative 55 break even, about to play his third game. Bottom dollar, center wing, and playing in the halves. Like, there is not really any better setup that you can ask for. He's showing great work rate both at center and also playing in the halves as well. The halves is probably more his natural position. He's played a lot more there than he has at center. So, yeah, sign me up. He's definitely coming into my team, I assume. Is he already in yours?
No, he's definitely coming in, though. He's definitely coming in.
I was going to say, I don't know. You already had Iro, so I had to ask.
Started with him, thankfully.
Yeah, fair enough. Outside of that, there's not a lot in terms of actual cheapy range. You know, Xavier Willison was on the bubble, but he's now, because of a head knock at training, I forgot to mention that before, but yeah, he's not named this week, not because he's been dropped, but he's actually in the protocol as well at the moment, so he's not going to be available for this round, but I think he'd be back in the team next week, provided there's no concussion issues there. Otherwise, yeah, like I said, Lachie Garvin's still got a negative 46 break even. He's gone up 107,500 already, but yeah, obviously in 2 weeks time, if you didn't jump on, he's definitely still a viable option there. Still looking fantastic and yeah, could continue scoring really well. Jack Bostock has already risen 90K, but still has a negative 41 break even. Really outside of cheapy range though, but 404,500 playing against the Tigers, who, like I said, you know, second best defense in the NRL, but at the same time, you know, they are the Tigers. So there is every chance that that doesn't maintain at the same high level at the moment. Who knows? And Dolphins top of the table, right? You laughed at me when I said Dolphins top 8.
I know. This is dead set. 2 years I have underestimated the Dolphins, and it has hurt me. I told everybody who would listen last year that Hammer was a trap and he turned into be a gun. I'm still telling people that, and he's killing it. Yeah, the Dolphins are actually hurting my credentials.
It's tough, isn't it? Because you can't, like, you look at the team list and then obviously you look at how they played in the trials and in round one, and it's just not great. But yeah, let's face it, they've been pretty good since then, albeit with some easier matchups. But you look at their run coming up, it's just easy matchups for the majority of it. So yeah, the Dolphins may just keep on riding on. Similarly, like Bostock, you know, 400K plus, but Justin Olam has played two games and scored, you know, in the 80s for both games, negative 40 break even. I guess if you don't want to bring in Bostock, you could look at Olam if you believe the Tigers will continue. But I just don't think he's scoring two tries a week, every single week. So buyer be warned is probably my suggestion there. Aside from that, like, there's honestly not very many names here. I mean, a lot of us probably have Joe Chan in our teams. He's nowhere to be sighted after going into surgery for a hand infection that he picked up in round two. Apparently someone trod on his hand and he just got infected since then and went for surgery over the bye round, and no sign. But yeah, he's not named in reserve grade either. So honestly, not sure what's going on. Maybe his recovery has not gone as smoothly, but that's a tough pill to swallow, because I kind of feel like I can't trade him out until I know what's happening.
Yeah. He might have been cooking with Albert and done bad stuff
again. I don't know if they're mates, but yeah, it'd be pretty typical, wouldn't it be? And yeah, aside from that, like, the only other negative break even is Tyron Wishart. We already said last week he's a red light, just don't go there. And he's obviously been benched this round as well because Munster's back. So yeah, pretty short segment right now. You know, we talked about money being hard to come by, and I guess the only other names that you kind of look at, you know, Liam Henry's still got a negative six break even, but Fisher Harris is back, so the minutes won't be as good as they have been the last 2 weeks. And then Kyle Flanagan, negative four break even, but he's already pushing 400K or thereabouts, so I'm a little bit unsure about that one there. But honestly, cheapies, they're already kind of running out sooner than we had hoped. But, you know, Blaise Tlalangi might be the last great hope for us for some time.
Yeah, I think it makes it even more clear, right? If you've got other trades in mind, you've got to find a way to get Tlalangi in. Like, I think with Moses being out for still another 9 weeks, Dylan Brown doesn't command a crazy amount of ball, so Tlalangi's still going to get plenty of stuff. Like, he's going to average more than 20, right? He's priced at a 20 average. If he averages less than 45, I'll be surprised. So there's 240K you can hopefully make out of him.
And the other thing that's, you know, we talk about what's the watch list for the coming few weeks, and, you know, maybe Willison will be there once he's named, so that's potentially another exit plan for your Sam Hughes types. But unless Carl Iro is going to be named in round 6-7 onwards, like, it's really starting to, you know, look pretty thin for cheapies. Yeah, that's enough cheapie chat for now. Let's take a quick break.
This episode is brought to you by Manscaped. Did you know one man every hour, every day is diagnosed with testicular cancer? In fact, testicular cancer is the most common form of cancer amongst men aged 15 to 35. With April being National Testicular Cancer Awareness Month, our friends over at Manscaped have partnered with the Testicular Cancer Society to help spread awareness for men's health and early cancer detection. Visit manscaped.com/TCS to learn how to check yourself for early signs of cancer. And as always, you can use the promo code CHAMPIONS for 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. It's as important in April as every other month to take men's health important. So with this in mind, you can perform simple routine checks at home while enjoying Manscaped products you use every day, like the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. It makes sense, right? We use products daily to trim and maintain our boys down there. The Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra features two interchangeable skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth and sleek. With dual LED spotlights, you'll achieve better visibility, making every trim more precise and hassle-free. Don't like making a mess? This thing is waterproof. Shave in the shower, in the bath, or even in the ocean. And you can bring this trimmer wherever you go, thanks to its wireless charging capabilities and travel lock feature. In addition to providing the right tools and solutions for comfortable and easy grooming, Manscaped is committed to raising awareness and giving support for fighters, survivors, and families impacted by testicular cancer. That is why they will be donating $50,000 to the Testicular Cancer Society. Help save lives and balls by going over to manscaped.com/TCS and sharing their funny, educational check yourself video. And while you're at it, grab 20% off and free shipping with the code CHAMPIONS. That's CHAMPIONS with an S. Because like a famous American philosopher once said, take care of your chicken, your balls, and your mentals.
How excited am I this week? On a scale of 1 to 10, about 12 and a half. There's a whole bunch of guys there that you cannot underestimate.
Oh, team lists. I have them somewhere here with me.
Alrighty, so kicking off this round, round 5, on Thursday night, it's the Storm and the Broncos. Yeah, look, I'm pretty excited for this game, even though my Broncos are under strength. But, you know, your boys, massive inclusions. Munster's back, Hughes is back from suspension, and you also get Christian Welsh back from his concussion protocol stand down. You've got Tyron Wishart dropping to the bench, and then, yeah, Kane Bradley drops out of the team as well. Yeah, look, this might be your strongest Storm lineup this year, right?
Yeah, it does look about as strong as you can get, right? There's probably only one name missing, and that's Nelson. But look, with I think as much as I'd love Joe Chandler playing, I think Sean Bloor is just as good, if not better. So, yeah, it might be a really good game of footy if the Broncos can play as well as they did last week, and they love a Thursday night game. So I'm excited for it.
On the Storm side, we'll stay with them. I mean, look, you get your Ryan Pappenhausens. We've talked about it in the past, but you know, he's looking really, really good already. 691,200, already gone up about 45, 46K. Has a negative 6 break even. Obviously, his low score from round 1 dropped out. And yeah, he's got 132 and a 78 in the rolling average. Look, this is at home, right, for the Storm. And they generally do play better there. And they often like beating the Broncos up. Albeit the Broncos have been a little bit more competitive, especially in the last 12 months. But I think it's hard to go past the Storm. I think they're going to be dominant here. Do you think Pappenhausen's a legitimate option when he's not got the goal kicking? And I don't think he's got it back yet.
It's tough. It's tough. I clearly do think he's a legitimate option because he is currently in my team after a boost. We'll have a question for a friend later that involves him. But look, if he had the goal kicking, I think it'd be easier to bring him in, but with that neg six, and as we said, it's difficult to make money in other places. So this might be not a bad place to make some cash and score some points at the same time.
The most promising stuff I saw from perhaps the last 2 weeks was that his base and base attack was getting up to the 50-ish mark where it's been, you know, when he's absolutely blitzed it. Round one was a little concerning, only 32, but since then 54 and 46. Normally he's good for, you know, another 12 to 16 points of goal kicking, which raises his floor to elite levels. But even, you know, if he's hitting 50s in base and base attack, and then obviously with his attacking upside, yeah, I like it. And he's getting more involved with his playmaking as well. He's doing a little bit more kicking that we've seen in the past and getting some forced dropouts and, you know, along the way. But that might drop out with Munster coming back. But yeah, there's some really, really encouraging signs there for Pappenhausen, which is, you know, even if he's not in your Supercoach team, it just makes you happy anyway, right?
Yeah, he's still amazingly with the leg injuries he's been through. He is still so explosively fast.
Yeah, and that's really good to see. Obviously, if he'd lost that, it would make him half the player that he is. So, look, let's go to the other end. Harry Grant, not quite been as explosive as we've seen in the past. And I know some chat has been about the pack not being as good as it has been. Not having Big Nelson there sometimes, you know, reduces the opportunities to run. 49, 61, and 63 so far. Not many attacking stats. In fact, he hasn't got a single major attacking stat aside from a line break assist and a line break so far. That's almost unheard of for Harry Grant, right? He's usually got at least one try assist or a try. Every one or two games, pretty much. So the question is, he's surely due, right?
Yeah, he's got to be, right? He is an incredibly creative number nine. That's where he probably is better than Cameron Smith in that sense, right? Smith could control a game better than Harry, but I still look back at that pirouette on a short side where he put the kick in and he just does things that other number nines don't do. So surely it is coming. I don't own him, so I hope it doesn't come just yet, but it's got to be.
And, you know, look, without Payne Haas in the middle there, Paddy Carrigan being forced to play, you know, massive minutes, I just feel like there's going to be some vulnerabilities for the Broncos in the middle. So it does worry me. Let's jump over to the Broncos. Obviously, still no Reece Walsh, still no Payne Haas. Having said that, we've got, you know, Tristan Saylor, who's doing a pretty damn good job. And, you know, Corey Jensen, Fletcher Baker, they're doing a job, I guess you could say. Like we said, no Xavier Willison, but we're getting a debutante here, Ben Takura, who is officially the tallest man in the NRL, possibly the biggest as well. He's bigger than Nelson, and that's saying something. So I'm really excited to see how he's going to go. Having said that, he's a rookie. Like, he's not going to be the game changer, I don't think, in this game. I just hope he does some, you know, some cool stuff. And doesn't leak any tries, which I think, you know, Harry Grant's going to take advantage of someone like him. Aside from that, that was the only change for the Broncos from the squad that knocked off the Cowboys last round. I don't know if there's much here, honestly.
No, there's really not. Hey, like, Jaden Hunt, maybe if Piakura is out for a little longer, but yeah, I still don't think he's... That edge back role is playing sort of 40-50 minutes, just not pretty, are they?
No, they're slightly better than edge back roles coming off the bench for 20-30 minutes. But yeah, I mean, he scored like 31 and 50-ish minutes. And look, I thought he played all right. It wasn't that he was playing poorly. It's just, yeah, not everyone can be like an Angus Crichton or someone like that where they just drip points everything they do. Yeah, I think until Haas is back, until Walsh is back, Broncos are generally a stay away if you can. Having said that, I might have to play Jesse Arthurs again because of all the Sharks buys and all of that. But anyway, that's my problem. Next game, Bulldogs and the Roosters. So we mentioned Bulldogs losing Addo Carr due to concussion protocols. Preston's out, Morin suspended. They get Blake Wilson back, who was 18th man last week. And as we said, Curran gets the start on the edge and Harrison Edwards joins the bench. Popular cheapie from last year, Harrison Edwards, and then Kitioni Kautonga joining the bench as well. For the Roosters, they get back Lindsay Collins. Terrell May drops back to the bench and Egan Butcher out of the 17. And they swapped Satili and Angus. So Angus gets the start this week with Satili on the bench. I don't know if that changes much in terms of minutes, but yeah. Look, I'm starting Drew Hutchinson this week as my starting halfback.
That's better than my starting halfback, probably Sam Hughes or Joey Lussick.
Yeah, is it really though? I don't know if it is, honestly. Yeah.
Maybe not against the Roosters, to be fair. I can't imagine there being many attacking stats to go around.
Yeah, look, Hutch has been pretty good the last 2 weeks, all things considered. You know, he's not looked great on the field, but still managed to do a job. High 40s. That's a win. He's making cash for me. I'll take it. But yeah, it's not a great week to be starting. But look, you know, it is a revenge game. Who knows? Hutch might lift for this one. And yeah, aside from that, look, you know, we talked about Curran a little bit. You know, your boy Viliami Kikau delivering. You know, he's made 50 grand or so. Doing all right.
Yeah, he is. Break even 22 this week as well. He should cover that with a solid 44. He seems to punch out 44s for fun, but no more unless he scores a try. Speaking of boys, James Tedesco, what did I tell you?
I was hoping you'd forget about that. But hey, look, he only scored, 47 last round? That's nothing, right? Between 47 and 147, like, that's closer to 75 as an average, right? Getting there?
Yeah, fair point. Dylan Edwards robbed him of a try assist by getting a gold grabby.
Yeah. But look, Teddy looks really good, and I think if you didn't have him, you know, he might not be a bad choice to bring him against the Bulldogs, honestly. The Doggies have not looked great. They're fighting hard. I'll give them that, but it's not very good at this moment. I think that's all that you really say about it. So, look, I also brought in Dom Young last round, instead of going with Hammer and, you know, Val and other smarter options probably. But I was, you know, I expected a lower score against the Panthers and I was looking at this matchup. So the only downside is it might be in a monsoon. It's like apparently 70, 80 millimeters of rain projected for the Friday. So it's not so great, but I've got my fingers crossed that Dom can still get some meat and hopefully deliver on the trade-in. Otherwise, I'll be very depressed. Killed another gun.
Yeah.
Any interest in Angus Crichton starting on an edge?
If Satili didn't exist, maybe. But as I said, it could well be another 50 minutes of Angus Crichton, 30 for Satili. Because like they've got bench players that need to play minutes, right? Terrell May is a 55-minute guy. Connor Watson is going to have to play some minutes. And Radley has been playing big minutes. So, look, I don't think he's going to play 80 on the edge. But, look, maybe you can drop some cash. See, then I say maybe you could drop some cash and Satili gets hurt and goes away. But, like, then they'll just bring in Wong probably. So, yeah.
Yep, it's a risky one. And just it's hard to predict what Trent Robinson's going to do with that back row. Just obviously just rotating them. I wanted to mention Nat Butcher briefly. He made a bucket load of tackles last round. I think somewhere in the vicinity of 60 plus. I just don't think that's, you know, don't read into that too much. It won't happen every week. And yeah, again, he's part of that back row rotation. Even though he might be the best of those back rowers at the moment, there's no, you know, guarantee that he's not going to be punted back to the bench. I mean, he started on the bench this year. So yeah, Robbers rotating those back rowers for sure. All right, other Friday game, the Knights and the Dragons. Obviously, another shuffle for the Knights. Hastings is back, Gamble's out. Dane Gagai, sudden withdrawal last week with an undisclosed medical condition, and he's back in the lineup. Leon Thompson back from suspension as well. And, yeah, finally, we've got Jaden Bradley starting at hooker with Crossland on the bench. So that's obviously, you know, a positive move there for the Knights. I think everyone can acknowledge Jaden Bradley is a better hooker when he's fit and firing. So this could be a, you know, an overall win. Kalen Ponga, you know, bounced back well and truly the last 2 weeks. I'm glad I stuck, you know, fat with him. And yeah, another great matchup here. If only it wasn't going to be a bog, because I was really looking forward to captaining Ponga against the Dragons this week. Do you have any interest in anyone else in the Knights? I mean, Kai Pierce-Paul, is he in your team?
No, and I think I've missed him now, to be honest. Like, he's up over 400K. I wish I had got him in. He's still not the world's worst trader, right? Like, I don't think he fully missed the boat, but I hate knowing that I could have got him last week and now getting him this week. It just makes me feel bad, even though it's probably not a bad decision. It makes me feel bad. The Ponga one interests me because right now I'm tossing up. I've got a fullback position there, and currently it's Pappenhausen. I can afford Ponga, and I think I've swapped them 3 times in the past 2 hours. So maybe you're right. I'll watch out for the weather because, look, I don't know. Maybe we can talk more on this tomorrow, but we'll just whet the appetite. Ponga has got a great run leading into Origin, but Paps has a minus six break even. I don't know where to go. We'll talk about it tomorrow.
Yeah, not a bad question to toss up for tomorrow's discussions. I'll say now, though, I would lean Pappenhausen between those two if you're bringing one in. I flirted with the idea of trading one of my fullbacks to Pappenhausen. I don't have the luxury of doing that, but if I did, yeah. Yeah, we can dive into it a little bit more tomorrow, as you say, but look, I feel like you're dismissing Kai Pierce-Paul a little bit, doing a bit of disrespect there. I mean, 67, 65 last 2 weeks, playing 80 minutes on that left edge. No attacking stats aside from a line break assist last round. That's really, really solid. And yeah, I get it. And I'm with you. I hate it not being able to pick up a guy at 345K when, you know, 100K cheaper, but he's still got a negative two break even. If he's dropping 65-ish in base and base attack, 60 to 65 on an edge with the attacking upside of being, you know, the edge back row running off Kalen Pong's preferred side. I don't know, mate. I could still, I'm looking at bringing him in, like I said, for maybe Sam Hughes, but, you know, yeah, I'm really tempted to. I really like the look of him for Supercoach purposes, and he's fun to watch, you know, as long as he doesn't lose his head and get himself sent off or sin-binned. He sounds like a lot of fun in your team.
Yeah, look, you're right. If you can average 65, that's another 200K. You've almost got to forget you've missed the first 100, and I'm not good at that. But yeah, if you can, as you say, 200K is nothing to be sneezed at, and he might be a keeper.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, it's not even just that. He could be a season-long hold. As the combo grows, as the fact is, you know, if he's going to keep dropping 55, 60, 65 in base attack with some attacking upside as well, yeah, he could definitely be a top five second rower come end of season. So, yeah, I'm really keen. Sign me up.
I've just picked up my phone to trade him.
Nice one. All right, let's keep it moving. So the next game, Rabbitohs and Warriors. This is in a core stadium, first game on the Saturday. We've already talked about AJ being out and Thompson being named. Jacob Hurst retains his spot in the back row. Cheekham's on the bench again, and we still got no sign of Lachie Ilias in the 17 on the extended bench, so Dean Hawkins gets another go. On the Warriors side, where you get the return of Chance Nickel-Cook start, which is great. Really good to see him back playing, and hopefully he stays fit. That pushes RTS back to left center, and that also means Pompey drops out of the 17. And as we mentioned, Metcalf's out injured, and Tamari Martin comes back in at 5'8". Now, they've swapped Egan's starting at hooker. They dropped Lussick to the extended bench, or 18th man rather, in the final teams last week to put Harris Tavita in. And he played 14, and obviously he was going to play at hooker when Egan was off. But I think with the Metcalf injury, that meant the CHT had to go straight into the halves. I wonder if they would prefer to have someone like Lussick there to spell Egan rather than having Harris Tavita. I don't know. It's interesting. They might swap that again, which makes me a little bit nervous with Tamari Martin. But yeah, we talked about, obviously you get a week to have a look. And we mentioned before, Cable is out, so Nia Corey gets to start in the second row. Yeah, bit of shuffling around here for these two teams. But there's a lot of chat about Sean Johnson being a legitimate option instead of Nathan Cleary, Nico Hines, anybody basically playing halfback. Has he interested you at all?
He obviously gets the goal kicking back now by default. So there's, call it maybe at least conservatively 8 points on his average, if not more, maybe 10. I'm going to be playing a lot of trades in my center wings and second row. I can just feel it. So I think I'm going to stick Nico and Nathan solid. But I'd rather have Sean Johnson for 65 points than Sam Hughes for 24 playing halfback. But look, not for me right now. I do get it though. It's a heart pick as well. Right? I've been playing Supercoach for a long time. You've seen Sean Johnson at his gun years. I was fortunate or unfortunate, whichever way you want to look at it, to never be a part of that. So I don't have that heartstring, but I definitely see it.
Yeah, and look, the Rabbitohs right now, like we said, not a great, let's face it, they're bottom of the ladder, right? And it's a lot of stuff's not working for them. Defensively, they're putting in, but there's still definitely some deficiencies. So I really like the idea of Sean Johnson this week. Any Warriors back, there could be some points on offer for sure. And, they've got a pretty good runner coming up. Like the Seagulls, they've been pretty frail defensively as well. Then you got the Dragons and the Titans and the Knights a couple of games after that. So I honestly don't mind the SJ play. If you don't plan to jump straight on Cleary once he's back, then definitely you could, potentially roll with SJ for a little bit longer. I mean, Cleary will come back against, assuming he's back in round 7, that's Tigers and then Cowboys, then Rabbitohs and Bulldogs. So not bad. But then for the Warriors, during that run, they've also got the Dragons, the Titans, the Knights, and then the Roosters. So, you could maybe roll a couple more rounds of SJ and then swap over to Cleary when he's got the easier matchups after that. So a couple of ways you could definitely play that one. Any interest in, I'll fess up. I ruined DWZ last round when I brought him into my team. Another victim of the curse. But yeah, it wasn't just for the Knights matchup. I thought there was going to be some games coming up where he could go quite well. I mean, this round he's going to be up against Thompson now. And I tend to think he could get him over for a try or two. And then the following weeks against Seagulls, Dragons, Titans, there could be a couple of pies on offer. So, if you're further back like me, you got to take some swings. You can't just keep following the crowd and bringing in, RTS. That's not going to help you. You got to try to get the guys going to outscore the popular pick. There's difficulties, though, when you got someone like a Val Holmes where you might just think, look, if I keep going against them, they're just going to get left behind because he's literally that good that he's scoring that many points. So, yeah, I feel like DWZ is not a bad smoky if you want to risk rolling that dice there. Any other names from this team that interest you?
Chance, I hate to see his name there. I'd prefer if he wasn't, because if it was DWZ, if it was Roger or Tua Pickett, that'd be better. But I'm glad to have him back. I can't believe how highly owned Roger is. Like, he's 43.4% owned. Is that right?
Yeah. He was pretty much 40% out the gate, so from round 1. So he's continuing to climb. But Yeah, I do feel like if he's stuck at left center, he's going to go well, don't get me wrong, but I just don't think he quite is locked in. Like Rodri at fullback, I could definitely almost pencil him into top five center wing come end of season, but at left center, I feel like the upside's just a little bit more capped because he's, you know, largely stuck on one side of the field and SJ's on the right side. And yeah, there's obviously a lot of traffic that goes down both the other end when SJ's working his magic. All right, we'll keep it moving. The Seagulls and the Panthers, obviously, Seagulls unchanged. And then we've got Fisher Harris returning for the Panthers and Maverick Guy drops out. Brad Schneider had a great game in his first game filling in for Cleary. So Tommy Turbo was my captain last round. I don't think he'll be my captain this week against the Panthers, even though he is at Four Pines. But Panthers, look, I thought they might be a little bit more vulnerable without Fisher Harris and without Cleary, but they're just machine-like. They just doesn't matter who's out, who's in, just keeps on going. Any interest in the Seagulls here? Are you trying to get rid of Ben Trbojevic? Is Tommy Turbo out of your team anytime soon?
Nah, Tommy can stay. He would have been nice to not be so bad last week, as with the C on him, as you say. But Benny Turbo is interesting, right? You said the Seagulls are unchanged, so I wonder if his 52 minutes or whatever he played last week remains unchanged. For that reason, I've got rid of him. I think he's not a keeper by any stretch of the imagination, and unless something happens, his cash is died for now. So he's just a body that I've got rid of. So not stoked about it, but yeah, he's gone.
It's not an urgent sell. I think he's pretty much his break evens where his, you know, his score is effectively. So kind of hope he just crashes over at some point, but it may not happen against the Panthers because it's the Panthers. Having said that, Olakuatu, we've talked about him for a couple of weeks now. He's still getting it done. I think he's a definite pod option if you are looking for someone in the second row. Probably just not this week, though, I think. Let's face it. Avoid Seagulls if you can. Yeah, same deal for Garrick. He's just elite, just keeps getting it done and getting goal kicks. So, yeah, hard to fault anyone chasing him as an option, but just not against the Panthers. On the Panthers side, obviously, Dylan Edwards had a great game. You know, picking up the goal kicking, which was a surprise to everyone, I think. We all expected Schneider, who, you know, doesn't kick them too badly. We just thought he'd take over. But yeah, Dylan Edwards, who knew he was third string behind Cleary and Critter last year? Not me.
I don't even think Dylan Edwards knew that, to be honest.
Fair shout. Taylor May, obviously a really popular player. I brought him in and promptly killed him because his work rate dropped off. It may have coincided with him signing his contract, though. Not just my fault, but I don't know. Do you think this is a bit of a post-contract signing drop-off here?
I hope not, because that is just, like, these guys are professional athletes. Look, I think you'll be right. I think you'll bounce back, right? Those kids from Mount Druitt or wherever the hell they're from, I think they just love playing football and love winning games. And he needs to be active to win games. It just feels like the last 2 weeks, Tago, or even 3 week, Tago has been the man, and it's taken some away from him. I don't think they can keep that up, and he's got to get more involved shortly.
Yeah, well, you know, the first 2 weeks, his base and base attack, 57 and 53. Last 2 weeks, again, post-contract, post-me bringing him in. No, that's a lie. I brought him in round two, so he did score 53 the first week I got him. But yeah, after that, 28 and 29 in base and base attack, just huge drop-off. So yeah, I mean, that's 20 points, pretty much. So it's a try-assist, line-break assist, basically. Wild, I don't get it, but yeah. We'll have to wait and see if that improves. I certainly can see some merit to jumping off like a Taylor May if you want to, you know, go from him to a bit of a pod. Like I think most of us, if you've got Taylor, you're paying him basically. So yeah, I can see some merit in swapping off to another option if you don't think he's going to keep it going. Isaiah Yeo, we talked about, you know, second row pods, and he's, you know, he's just not a sexy pick, is he? He's just meat and potatoes, but bloody good, bloody good.
Yeah, it's really well cooked meat and really well seasoned potato.
That's right? It. It's not just a standard lamb roast. It is a filet mignon type quality here. You know, 69, 68, 65, 72. That's his base and base attack. And then when you can kick the ball like Isaiah Yeo can, you can jag the old try assist here and there. The guy's just on fire. And it's hard to see him not just continuing this. Like, I don't know. Like, do you see him dropping off anytime soon?
No, I don't. Isaiah Yeo, over or under, 30 years old.
Oh, he's like 33, isn't he?
Under. He is 29.
He's the oldest 29-year-old in the NRL for sure.
Looks like he's 39, runs like he's 39, and then punches out 70 in base and base attack. It's ridiculous.
It's incredible. And yeah, look, he's the highest averaging second rower at the moment, ahead of Hopgood, Ford, Oluquatu, and Hosking. Yeah, the guy is just a machine. Can't see it stopping anytime soon. Like, I think he could just keep this up until maybe Origin, and then it'll drop off then, because he'll get managed, and back in the year he'll probably get rested. So I kind of don't mind if you jump on now. You'll enjoy these premium scores until, yeah, you can trade him out just around Origin time and move on to buy coverage by then. All right, let's keep it moving. Dolphins and the Tigers. So the Dolphins, aside from the Plath forced change there, Ray Stone starts, K-Brom joins the bench, no other changes for them. Similar story for the Tigers, forced change with Jaden Sullivan coming in to replace Garvin, and they get Latu Fainu for his first game after injury, for his NRL debut, and also Alex Twall back in after his 11-day stand down for concussion protocol purposes. Fainu, there's a bit of hype about him. He's another young kid. You know, there's some chat that he was going to start at 5'8 instead of Galvin, instead of anyone else, but then he got hurt and missed some time. He's played hooker, I think, from memory. Last year, he debuted in one of the internationals as a hooker, even though he's a half, and he actually did pretty well. And I wouldn't be surprised if he is playing that role here, as well as, you know, if Sullivan stinks, maybe he'll get thrown into the six. But yeah, there's a chance that Fainu's taking minutes off Coruscant, as much as it would suck for happy owners. I mean, do we bite the bullet? I know you've talked about this, but Hammer just keeps on getting it done, doesn't he?
I don't want to talk about it anymore, but yes, he does. He looks so bad on the field at times, and then you look at his score and he's on 45 and he's done nothing. And because, as we say, he can have one reckless run with a two tackle bust and a line break and an offload, and there's 25 points, and missed three tackles, dropped two balls, and he only goes down six. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yep, and that's the thing, right? Because we've seen him have some absolute shocking games and still score. Like, his round one game was probably the worst I've seen him play in first grade. He scores 79, right? And then he scores a hat-trick in round two, scores 94, scores a try, two try assists, multiple line breaks, two line break assists, just attacking stats everywhere. The guy's hitting like 33 and 35 in base attack. So if he doesn't get those attacking stats, he will stink, but like, tries and attacking stats, there is base, basically. That's the way it feels, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess they do. In the theme of, I suppose I talk this to everybody else, everything has to go through him. If it's not Marshall King, it's got to be the Hammer. So
that seems to be the way they're playing. And look, his ball playing, he talked about, he modelled his game on Scotty Drinkwater in terms of the attacking improvements he wanted to make. He talked about that in the preseason, and to his credit, it's definitely seeming like it's carrying through. So yeah, Tigers this week, then Broncos, Eels, Knights, Cowboys again for him. So it's not the easiest draw. So yeah, I certainly couldn't begrudge anyone bringing in Hammer this week, but I just kind of feel like I'm not gonna ruin Hammer. I like him. He can stay away, curse free from my team.
I will never own him. I will never own him.
It's fighting words there. What about Jermaine Osako? Will you own him?
Never own him either. No, no. If they were a Dolphin, then no.
You just don't like Dolphins, do you?
I know.
That's rude. Look, Osako had a massive game last week, right? So first two games, 34 and 37 in base-based attack, 66 in round four. And yeah, like 20 points in goals, and he had one try assist and one line break, and that was it. Everything else was base-based attack and goal kicks for Osako. So that is the upside there for him, being a goal kicker for a top-of-the-table team. And the attack is humming. So I do think I was a little bit down on Osako because I thought Herbie was going to steal a lot of his touches, but he's managed to find a way to get himself involved still. So good on him, honestly. I like Ice. Yeah, he's a former Bronco, and I liked him when he first came onto the scene. And yeah, I've got a soft spot for Jermaine. Any other players that you want to talk about in this matchup?
No. I've got Isaiah Papali'i. He was disappointing last week, but I'm holding him. That's really the only guy of interest right now on that side.
I still think if you wanted to, Tommy Flegler in the front row forward position, he's gone up in price already, but I do think he's still value based on where he's at the moment. You know, he's the go-to guy. Like, he's playing as many minutes as he can handle, and he seems to be, you know, a lot of the good stuff comes off him, whether it's like offloads or him scoring a try or just, you know, hard runs that they play off the back of for their, you know, I think one of the Herbie try they scored down that side, it came off a Flegler run effectively, you know, quick play to ball and everything just came from that. So yeah, Flegler really, really good. And the only downside is that, you know, he's going to be leaned upon by Queensland, I think, come Origin time. Otherwise, the Dolphins had a really nice bye schedule through that Origin period as well, which, again, that's why Asako is quite interesting to me. Hammond, less so, because, again, he's probably playing for Queensland. But I will throw out there, Marshall King is definitely on my radar. You know, I've got a Joey Lusick problem, and I've already got Harry Grant, so I've got, you know, a gun there already, but I'm really tempted to just partner those two and just lock and load that position away for the season. Marshall King's looked good so far, and, you know, as long as he can stay healthy, that's I feel like he's going to be a top three hooker this season as long as his health permits it. So, yeah, sign me up. I don't know if it's this round or next round or the week after, but I feel like Jeremy will join my team sooner rather than later. So sorry in advance, Dolphins fans.
He'd be much more fun to own than Joey Lusick. They're slightly different players.
Yeah, just a little bit. Bit of an upgrade, but I've still got so much cash in my bank. Anyway, let's move that on. The Cowboys and the Titans here. This is the first game on Sunday. For the Cowboys, despite losing the Broncos, unchanged team. And on the Titans, Desi Hasler has lost it at the squad. Dropping wingers left, right, and center. No, Phil Sammy's injured, so he's out. AKP is dropped, though. And Jojo Fifita gets his first shot this year, and Harley Smith-Shields as well. Dave Fifita still on the bench, but I wouldn't be surprised if there is a late swap for maybe Cleese going back to the bench instead. And Isaac Liu, obviously, in the concussion protocol, so that means Jamin Joloff gets to move into prop. And Aaron Clark gets to start at lock instead, and they got a rookie on the bench. But yeah, look, I think generally speaking, I would suggest just avoiding Titans, right? Except for Jaden Campbell, except for Dave Fifita, they are worth considering, I think.
Yeah, Dave will be interesting. I think a couple more games with the bench would be nice, but even then, is he going to be in the same attacking ball as he was last year to average 83 or something? But yeah, it's funny, right? To start the season, we all had Jaden Campbell when we had high hopes for the Titans, and now they're a dumpster fire. Do we all still go there? Who knows?
Yeah, look, Dave played 55 minutes off the bench, still scored 57 with 49 of that in base pairs tack, had a line break assist. So just shows how good he is for Supercoach. As soon as he gets an opportunity, like, I definitely think he, as bad as the Titans are going to be, I still think Fifita is going to be up the top three, second row forward. So it's just a matter of when you get him in. But yeah, as you say, maybe a couple more games off the bench, hopefully drop the price a little bit before you can bring him in. And for the Cowboys, I mean, we've talked about Drinky, we talked about Val Holmes, Dearden. There's just a whole list of attacking players you could bring in this week against these Titans, right?
Yeah, I'm not bringing any of them in, but I'm sticking solid to my main man, Tommy D, and hopefully he can kick away at 5'8 and be the leading guy with an average of hopefully something with a 7, not a 6.
You talked about trading in either Ponga or Pappenhausen. Has Drinky crossed your mind at all?
He does, and then every time he does, I remember that 2 that he scored last year, and he is straight back out of my mind.
I mean, that, to be fair, he was sin-binned and had a shocker. Like this round against the Broncos, he had a really, really poor game. Like, Reynolds was tormenting him, but he still scored 77, right? With, you know, his best game, base attack, 56 points. Which is not, that's very undrinky. Like, he's usually in the high 30s, low 40s at the best. So, you know, against the Titans, and we talked about the draw already for the Cowboys, but yeah, I'm definitely interested. I guess I'm not in the position of being able to trade out Ponga or Turbo. I've got other fires to put out in my team, but yeah, I can certainly see some people maybe wanting to take the punt. You know, maybe they've got Latrell or someone like that where they're not quite convinced that he's going to get the job done, and maybe they want to jump ship before he loses cash or whatever. I can certainly see some people jumping on a drink water. And yeah, Val Holmes, he's in your team, right?
No, he's not. I wish he was. We all started with him last year. I remember they had a great start to the year last year, and he was abysmal. And then They've had an almost as good a run this year. Didn't start with him, and he's been a gun. You've got him.
No. Haven't broken him yet. But
yeah, bring him in, please.
Look, he might be. He might come in and be my captain this week. So double curse. Honestly, I don't know. He's in my team currently, but like I've flipped and flopped around. Like I said, I like Marshall King. I like Kai Pierce-Paul. Talangi's definitely locked in, so that's a given. But outside of that, the other two trades, I've gone like three or four players. I'm just rotating in and out. So yeah, I like to look at Val with the armband on him this week. So sorry in advance, I guess. Last game of the round, Raiders and Eels on the Sunday, obviously. Raiders just with Hosking out, they've got Mariota starting on the edge, and they also have Simi Sasangi joining the bench. Sasangi's an interesting one. So he's from the Knights. He used to play in the halves. He's played centers. He's played lock. But this year he's been playing back row for the Mounties. So I was wondering what he's going to do because they've obviously got Starling there and whatever. But Sasangi might be there just as an edge back rower, basically. Maybe utility at a pinch. But I imagine he's put on a bit of size from when he was a center and when he was in the halves. For the Eels, obviously Morgan Harper, the casualty for their loss to the Tigers. And then Bailey Simpson's there. Still no Cardi Party. Got that rib injury. And they've got Wiramu Greg back in. First game back after injury here. And yeah, Brendan Hans drops out of the 17 after being a late inclusion. Unfortunately, the same situation. Eels playing the last game in the round makes it really hard to rely on someone like a Joey Lussick with the fear that Hans might come into the 17 at any moment. It sucks.
Yeah, like surely Brad Arthur knows now if he's going to play him. Stop playing silly. But this is Brad Arthur versus Ricky Stewart. It is super coach assholes.
I like it. You know, I'm being forced to play Ethan Strange pretty much. I think, as you say, a lot of people might be in that position just because of the buys and other players that they've got in their team. For the Raiders, I mean, any interest? Like, I know a lot of us have Morgan Smithies. He's definitely been underwhelming the last few games. Like, I think we can move him on pretty soon, right?
Yeah. With Horsburgh back, they've just got too many big minute players, and he is the most unattacking player in the league, possibly.
I know you didn't play Supercoach earlier in the day. It's like you talked about not being around for Sean Johnson's heyday, and you've never seen Sean Fenton play, have you?
No, I've seen him play, not from a Supercoach perspective. That would have been the most blandest meat and potato. That's silver side and boiled potato.
Right? He was, you know, we've jokingly called Smithies Sean Fenton 2.0, right? Because he's literally the same player in many respects, just a tackle bot and very uninspiring runs. And that is Smithies pretty much. But yeah, the minutes obviously slowly dropping. You know, we had hopes he was going to be 80 minutes and he had that kind of round one by the HIA that he went off the field for, 80 minutes in round two. And then since then, slowly dropping and dropping. So Corey Horsburgh was horrible in his first game back in NRL. Like it was just not good. But you'd think he's going to be better for the run. He's too good of a player not to bounce back from that. And I think, you know, Ricky's going to give him more minutes as he gets a bit more match fit at first grade level again. But yeah, Smithies, I think, look, he's still at a point where he might go up a little bit more cash-wise before his break even catches up to his average. But yeah, I mean, if you could sit him, ideally, you'd love to be able to sit him because he might dish up another 40-ish score. But he's in my starting second row this week. No choice for me to sit him, unfortunately. Any other Raiders here at all interest you?
No, I'm unfortunately probably going to have to roll out both Strange and Savage in my 17. I'm just waiting for the second their break even catches their average and a tough matchup and they are gone. But yeah, for now they can hang around.
I really like Savage though. He's looked really, really good. And I can understand, you know, we were so frustrated at Ricky Stewart holding him back. We're feeling like, you know, you should get a shot. But I feel like that patience that Ricky Stewart's shown with Savage actually has benefited him, you know, on the field. So to be fair, as much as we hate Ricky and, you know, his tendencies, I do think it's actually really helped Savage this, you know, develop his game and find that patience. And yeah, he's looked really good as a result this year. So not quite translating for Supercoach, but he's enjoyable to watch. Good to see him performing. So yeah, good on him. For the Eels, obviously, you know, we've talked about Talangi. That's fine. Let's lock him in. I think a lot of us are sick of Lussick, you know, honey potting us after the, you know, the those first juicy games where he's hitting 80s and whatever and just disappearing since then. We talked about Clint Gutherson being a good option last week with no Moses there. You know, his average has always been really good once he picks up the goal kicking and more playmaking responsibility, and that's proven very true so far. Any other, like, I mean, would you consider Gutho in your fullback spot?
No, I just think there's too many other fullbacks with higher upsides than Gutho. If we had five fullbacks, maybe, but he's not for me right now. From the Eels, I'm really glad to see Sean Lane last week. He almost doubled his runs, yeah, which was good because he was looking incredibly uninspiring up until last week.
Yeah, his work rate just exploded out of nowhere. And I don't know if that's a byproduct of obviously Dylan Brown, you know, having to take a little bit more control and obviously using Lane a bit more. You know, maybe it's a byproduct of Cardi Party being missing as well. So there's a few reasons you can point to for that, but yeah, it's a good sign for Sean Lane. If you've got him in your team, I think you'd persevere a little bit longer, especially if you can keep up that work rate. And, you know, he's still got that attacking upside for sure. Yeah, all right. I think that's the teams in a lot of detail. Apologies again. I'm always the one. You know, I always say he rushes through the games, but I think, to be fair, it's probably a good thing. I just talk about all the random players that I feel like I want to talk about. So that's my bad. All right, quick update in the group competition. Again, unlimited league code is 354964. This is the final week you can jump into our group competition to go into the running to not just win our $500 cash overall prize at the end of season, but also for our Supercoach champion ring, courtesy of SC Rings. So the top ranked listener in the competition group at the end of round five will win that ring. And then, yeah, the group locks afterwards. You can't join it anymore. So that code again, 354964. Currently, we've got Josh, the coach of Cockledoodle Doo, ranked 139th overall, pacing that group. In pole position for that ring. And obviously, if he can keep that up for the season, he'll be there for the $500 overall prize. That obviously is $1,000 if you're also a champ and in our champs only group. And we do have a second prize there from our friends at Rugby League Fantasy Pro, SC Pro Sub for next year. And yeah, like we've talked about in the past, definitely that subscription is a cheat code for head-to-head, for overall, like just in the end game when you need to know how many trades everyone else has. It's just incredible stuff. So yeah, thanks again to Adrian and his team at Rugby League Fantasy Pro for their generosity there. Mate, it's such a tough week. You've talked about using boosts and stuff like that. I'm almost guaranteed I'm going to lock in another boost. Have you kind of penciled in some trades yet or not quite?
Yeah, the boost is locked in. I think that's my third boost. when you're 45,000th, you got no choice.
When you're 79,000th, you also got no choice. So that's my third boost coming in this week.
Yeah, look, I have locked in a couple of trades. Benny Turbo to Talungi is a definite. And then I've got two guys to trade out with that'll give me a lot of cash. So I'm going Mulatalo out because he did his job for 2 weeks and made some cash. Would have liked bit more, but he did what he did. And Zach Hosking, well, yeah, I brought him in and killed him. So both of them are gone. I think that gives me like 1,420,000 to play with for hopefully a fullback and a second rower. Right now it's Ryan Pappenhausen and Pierce Paul with an extra 380K in the bank.
So, oh, you literally picked up your phone and did it.
I did. I had Ellie Katoa there and I picked up and I traded it to Pierce Paul.
I do like Ellie too, to be fair. Like, not trying to talk you out of that one, but Pierce Paul probably better value at the price.
Yeah, he is. And I can always get Ellie next week when kick-out's got to go.
Yeah, right now, Plath out to Talungi is the only trade I've definitely locked in 100%. After that, though, like I said, I've got Marshall King from Lussick. I've got maybe Taylor May to Val Holmes. I've got Hughes to Pierce Paul. I had Ellie Katoa in my team for a bit as well. Like, I'm all over the shop, but yeah, I don't know. I've only got really one trade that's definitely locked in, but I will be bringing two other guys in because I've got to try salvage my season somehow. But yeah, look, overall, like, I've still got some good pieces in my team. Lots of cash rolling in, which is always a positive, and yeah, I think I still think I'm going to trust the process. I'm going to get there at the end of the year. Maybe not top 1K, but some at least in the top, you know, 10K, hopefully. Lowering my standards already. No, I'll be pushing for top 1K still. I'm not giving up yet. All right. Thanks for jumping on, mate. And we'll obviously, we're going to catch up again tomorrow as we dive into our number crunching, our captaincy chat, and definitely a lot more strategy consideration there. So I'm going to say welcome back technically because 2022 overall champion Matt White is joining me again to discuss Supercoach. We chatted just last night, but for you listening, I've combined these into one episode because, let's face it, I'm busy and I didn't quite get a chance to get it all edited and pieced together, uploaded. So you're going to get one massive episode, but this is recorded over two nights. So welcome again, Matt. How's it going?
Good, mate. Good. Look, Joe was dead to us last night. He's dead to us again today. But for everyone listening, he's just dead to us once.
Yeah, look, to be honest, I haven't heard from him. So hopefully he's not actually dead. But no, he's pretty crook. So rest up, Joe. Hopefully you get better. Hopefully your Supercoach scores also improve. But look, we got a busy episode. It's a massive week. And we're going to crunch some numbers. We're going to dig into captaincy for this round. And we've got some real interesting strategy chat. So we'll dive straight into it.
Let me clue you in. We need a numbers guy. Get Wilfred.
All right. So firstly, again, thank you to our good friend Carl McGrath, accountant, for sponsoring the segment, Crunching the Numbers. If you do want to make sure you're not fudging your numbers when it comes to your taxes, make sure you get Carl to help you out. So for this week, I want to look a little bit about the scoring. More specifically, our 100 plus scores, because, captaincy is a big deal. And also, obviously, when you land that 100 plus score, it feels pretty damn good. So, I'm going to compare what we've got this year compared to last year, because I'll throw it to you. Do you feel like the scoring's quite different between the two seasons so far?
Yeah, it definitely feels lower. Maybe that's just because my team is horrible at the moment, but it feels like everybody's struggling to crack that 1,000 mark. Look, it's definitely lower than last year. I think it's probably lower than my year, and it's definitely, obviously I don't think you have the numbers for it, but compared to 2021, it's a different game we're playing, right?
Yeah, let's just forget about 2021. That's absolutely an outlier season. But
sorry, Timmy.
No, I absolutely agree because I'm yet to crack 1,000, so it feels like this year has been really low scoring, but at the same time, it's surprising, and that's why we dive into the numbers. So firstly, 2023, so this is last season, round one, we had 600-plus scores, max of like 120, I think, something like that. Round two, we had 600-plus scores, high score of 148. Round three, 800-plus scores, a max of 114. And round four, this was 800-plus scores and a max of one Nico Hines, 180, not in my team that round. So, it felt like a fast start, right, for last year. Plenty of high scoring out the gate. Now, what's really surprising, and it blew my mind when I found these numbers, but so 2024, round one, 900-plus scores, max of 116. Round two, 900-plus scores, highest of 145, and the second highest was 132. Round three, 1,000-plus scores, max of 150, 144, and 135. And round four, 900-plus scores with a max of 120. So basically, in terms of 100-plus scores, it's tracking ahead of 2023. I'm not quite sure why the scores are. Maybe it's these players that are not highly owned in Supercoach that are scoring. Last round, max 120, Dylan Edwards was the guy. Round three, max score of 150. Dom Young, 2% ownership. Having said that, second high score is 144 was Val Holmes, who was obviously much more highly owned there. And round two, max score of 145, Isaac Tonga. So, there are big scores, but they're not landing in the usual suspects. There's no Nico Hines hitting 180. There's no Nathan Cleary going absolutely ballistic, although he's put in a decent score already. And round two, Ryan Pappenhausen, 132, but the majority of us were on, Littrell, Ponga, Turbo, you name it, other guys were ahead of Pappenhausen. So I feel like that's what's going on there. So I definitely think there's an opportunity based off the numbers. The scoring is not the issue here. It's just how do we get the right guys into our team, right?
Yeah, it's amazing. You'd be expecting dudes like Harry to have at least 100-plus score now or even Dillbags. Like I know they're highly owned in positions and they're lucky to break 60, let alone 100.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because, like, you look at the scoring. So across all the teams, and I'm looking more broadly at the scores that teams are allowing. So right now there are two teams in the NRL that haven't allowed 100-plus super coach points to be scored against them. I'll give you three guesses.
I'm so bad at these games.
you on the spot.
you blew my mind yesterday saying the Tigers were the number two defence. So is it the Tigers?
It isn't, but... You know, it's a fair guess.
Look, we'll go Penrith. Let's go two off the bat here. We'll go Penrith and Melbourne.
So I'll give you Melbourne. 0 100-plus scores against them at the moment. Only three scores over 80 points in Supercoach. So they're definitely up there. Penrith actually have had a 100-plus score against them, and they've only allowed two 80-plus scores. So, you know, one of them being 100-plus. So really, really tough defensively. There's no surprises there. Tigers, not too bad. They've only allowed 200-plus scores and four scores above 80 this year. But the real surprising one, the Canberra Raiders, 0 100-plus scores against them and 4 80-plus scores so far. So doing quite well defensively, no big scores. Now let's flip it to the other end of the spectrum here. Which teams do you think have been leaking the most Supercoach points? So let's go over the 100-plus scores. Which two teams do you think have conceded the most?
Well, just watching the Cowboys, it doesn't look like they could tackle a tackling bag. So I'd have to say they've leaked a few.
All right. So that's one of your guesses. What about the other one?
The Titans. Let's go all Queensland.
Titans, definitely. They've conceded the most. 500-plus scores, 11 80-plus scores against them. So absolutely, they're one of them. The Cowboys, actually, surprisingly, not that bad. Only 100-plus scores so far and 3 80-plus scores. So I was surprised when I looked that up. But I guess they're conceding lots of points, but not to the same player. And it's maybe just being spread. The love is being shared amongst the teams. So there are a few teams like the Broncos, the Bulldogs, and the Dolphins who all have conceded 400-plus scores, but they haven't conceded that many 80-plus, only six each respectively. The team that's actually conceded the most 80-plus scores, aside from the Titans, so they've, you know, like I said, 500-plus and 11 80-plus. We've got the Rabbitohs, which have conceded 80-plus times, 10 times. So 10 different players, and two of those converted into 100-plus scores. So no massive tons generally against the Rabbitohs, except for that must have been the Dom Young and Teddy combo in that round where they absolutely smashed them. But lots of 80-plus scores against them. The next highest 80-plus score team is actually the Dragons. So still only 200-plus scores, but eight 80-plus. So yeah, a lot of love being shared amongst those teams. Not too many tons, but yeah, it's the Titans seem to be clearly the team to target, followed closely by the Rabbitohs. And I guess you can extrapolate a little bit more, right? So the Rabbitohs in one of the games, they played the Bulldogs, who obviously are struggling offensively. So yeah, that probably explains a little bit of it. But you know, it terrifies me as someone who is only bringing in Val Holmes this week. I don't have Dearden. I don't have Drinkwater. I don't have Robson. No Nanai. There's plenty of guys who potentially could score big points this round for the Cowboys against the Gold Coast Titans. I know you've got Dearden there. I know, spoiling a little bit of the captaincy chat, but did you flirt with the idea of captaining Tommy Dearden?
He's definitely had multiple coloured armbands on at different times this week. Yeah, look, we'll get him against that. Although Nerva's been having Val, I think Val is probably the most likely of all those names you rattled off to go large, right?
Yeah, and like we mentioned and like discussed earlier this round, Val is definitely one of my trade-in targets. And I think the fact that they are playing the Titans and I'm struggling to find a good captaincy option, yeah, Val is absolutely higher on the list because I can definitely bring him in and slap the orange armband on him for this round. So yeah. All right. Well, look, I think that's enough number crunching for now. So thanks again to Carl. Get in touch with him as tax time is coming up very, very soon. Get him to help with your tax return. He'll legally maximize your tax refund, whether it's just a basic tax return or accounting for things like rental properties, capital gains, or share trading, even crypto. Carl can help you out and record everything correctly. There's no job that's too big or too small. Whether you've got a small individual tax return right through the businesses run through companies, partnerships, or trusts, Carl can help you out. And even if you just need more than a tax return, he can also help you out with all aspects of accounting like BAS lodgements and data entry. And Carl, again, wants me to remind his current clients, they can go into the Number Crunchers League group, get in touch with Carl for the code and can go into the running to win a $99 tax return discount off your tax. And you can also challenge, obviously, Joe, myself, and Timmy Moody. There's a few others of us in that group, so definitely jump in there and take us on. Get in touch with Carl. Carl McGrath, MCGRATH, accountant on all the socials. So, yeah, definitely get in touch with him.
Look, man, I only need to know one thing.
Who the hell is this guy?
You and the Chosen One!
You think I had a choice?
This is your captain speaking.
All right. I have to say, it's a tough round. I feel like it's a tough round for captaincy this week. I don't know if about you. I really need a bounce back. Captaining Tommy Turbo last round for 55 didn't leave a good taste in my mouth. So help me out, Matt.
Look, it is a very tough round. There is one thing that I am excited about it. And look, I've got no halfback. There's maybe some teams out there running no 5'8". So there's potentially, look, it's not a full free swing at a VC, but it's definitely an easier and more palatable VC option. So you almost get two cracks at it. I still think I might need 10 cracks, but look, it gives me a better chance, right?
Yeah, look, I think this is one of those rounds, especially if you've got a couple of sharks like Nico Hines and anybody else, where you might be running pretty short on AE options, right? I'm looking at my team. I'm flip-flopping between running just an AE this round for Plath and Galvin, for example, at my 5'8 position. Plenty of people with the Nico Cleary, you know, conundrum that you've got there. So you might be copping an AE. I'm looking at my options. It's going to be probably Liam Henry, Sam Hughes, or Ethan Strange, basically, if I don't trade Plath out for Strange to move up to 5'8". So effectively, that, you know, it's a fairly kind of stock standard option. I'll know what Hughes is scoring by the second game of the round. You know, I'm probably just guessing Henry's going to be somewhere around the 40 mark, give or take, barring an injury. So, you know, it's a fairly safe swing at a VC. And then, and you know, you can always captain Nico Hines, right, who's on the bye, won't lock out to the final game of the round. Plenty of options there. So let's jump straight into the VC options then. I think, look, first and foremost, Ryan Pappenhausen, if you got him in your team, he's got to be a prime candidate, right?
Yeah, he is. He is. And under strength Broncos, they still look good, but look, the Storm have got, as we spoke last night, they've got all their troops back. It's possibly going to be dry in Melbourne, which is a good start. And Amy Park, look, the Storm haven't got off to a flyer. They're going okay. But I think from this week, they will want to seriously build and perhaps hopefully scoring a couple of tries. I still remember, you won't like to hear this, Wilf, but I know you're a Paps guy, the four tries at Suncorp that night.
I wasn't there. But I had the orange armband on Ryan Pappenhausen, so I was so torn, cheering the tries, but also, you know, cursing him for scoring against my Broncos. But the fact is he's had a really good run against the Broncos. Last scores of 78, 197, 122, and 96, last four starts. Obviously, that is spread out over a couple of years there. And, yeah, the fact is he's, you know, he's a big game player and he loves playing against the Broncos. The fact is he's got a really good record at Amy Park. Average career average of 72, you know, his high score of 197. So that definitely is very memorable. I do like Ryan Pappenhausen this round. I guess the next game, this is where it's tough, right? Because I think if it was a happy sunny day, you'd probably feel pretty comfortable with like a VC on a Teddy or even a Dom Young against the Bulldogs for the Roosters, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They're definitely going well. As you said, they both turned up huge against the Rabbitohs. This is an interesting one, and as soon as I say this, I think you're going to start shaking your head, but at some point in time, I did have the VC on Terrell May. Like, if he can base 60 and score a try, there's 95. I'll take it. You know what I mean? I'll take it at this rate.
Oh, look, it's certainly a conservative way to play it. I won't write off that option, but I never really like counting on a prop to crash over for a try to then get to a loopable score. So that's probably the counterpoint I'll throw there. But yeah, I'm always going to lean towards, you know, the guy who can hit 120 plus, and we've known Teddy and Dom Young have done it obviously this year already. Just it's a matter of that weather. If it's going to be an absolute monsoon, then that definitely really caps the upside there. Any other names you can think of in the early? I mean, you know, let's talk about the first three games, I guess you could say, that I would comfortably look at for a VC option. you know, it is the Knights and the Dragons, but it's another questionable weather day, right?
Yeah, I think Newcastle's even predicted to get worse than Sydney, right? But anyone who's kept Ponga, I know, as you said, there's people looking to bring in Ponga this week if the weather was better. He's definitely an option, right? In terms of being able to go 120, Ponga's your guy. He can do it on his ear, really.
And I guess if you want the kind of safer, you know, potential upside play, you know, Kai Pierce-Paul, if he's hitting 60s, and I'd like his chances of scoring a pie more than Terrell May, if I could put it that way. And if it is going to be wet and they're going to play a little bit more through the middle, if Pong is going to put someone over, it could still be KPP. So, yeah, a bit of a left field VC option there, but I kind of can see a little bit more safety in that there. You know, I guess we could probably talk about the Bunnies and the Warriors. It's still early enough in the round where, especially because you can, you know, wait a little bit later to loop someone like Nico Hines if they're going to be your captain. So, yeah, I guess in that situation, would you look at one of the Warriors guys, you know, SJ, RTS, DWZ, hopefully?
Yeah, well, look, RTS back to center. I think that does cap his upside a little bit. DWZ, you're relying on two tries at least, potentially three for him. Although, as you said, his base is higher. But even the Rabbitohs, right? It's at home. If you're a believer, if you're a proper Rabbitohs homer, Latrell's got to do something eventually, you'd think, and why not start now? But that game right now, it's $2.07 South, $1.79 Warriors. I think that sort of sums up what game you're going to get. It might be an 18-16, and that doesn't bode well for vice-captain.
Yep, that's very fair. And I guess we're getting to that stage of the round where you might be looking more at the orange armband. So Tommy Turbo against the Panthers, but playing at Four Pines Park, I don't know. Is it a consideration for you at all?
Who did he play last week when he scored 50 and ruined our lives?
That's an interesting way of putting it. Who did he play last week? It was the Dragons.
Yeah, I think that sums up. No, he's not getting the armband against Penrith, right?
Yeah, well, that one was away. I guess that's the only kind of justification I'll throw out there, that this is at home where we know Tommy does like to play. You know, he turns up at Brookie, thinking about his career average there. 194 top score. He's got some injury-affected games there, but, you know, he's played 46 games there and still averaged 81 at that venue. So it's a pretty impressive run. Having said that, his last scores against the Panthers, 26, 62, 68, high score of 80 in the last 5 years. Yeah, I probably would give that a wide berth as well as far as the captaincy goes. So we're getting to the point of, you know, are we looking at Hammer again? You know, against the Tigers, yes, they are quite stout defensively, but the Hammer is on fire. And it paid off for people last round, obviously.
Yeah, it definitely did, right? I think that was his only second time cracking a ton in his career. Why not go back to the well? I'm just looking at it. Who would have thought Dolphins, Tigers would be first versus sixth, right?
Yeah. That's definitely an interesting thought there. If you ask someone in preseason whether you thought this was going to be like closer to a top of the table clash or a spoon bowl, early preview of the spoon bowl, I think we know what most people would have said there. But yeah, so Hammer's an option potentially. You know, would you look at anybody else from the Dolphins or the Tigers even?
Nah. Oh, look. Yeah, Appy started the season attacking incredibly well, and I still think he was only scoring in the 90s. They'd have to put on a serious clinic to for him to bust a 120 out. And I think, as we spoke, everything goes through the Hammer at the Dolphins. So maybe Herbie or as you say, you're a big Jermaine guy. Maybe Herbie or Jermaine can crash over for two tries each. That makes them relevant. Look, it's not out of the question.
I guess we'll come to probably the game most people are going to be picking a captain from, the Cowboys against the Titans. This is in Townsville. And look, there is still meant to be scattered thunderstorms, I think, throughout the day, but it might be one of the better, yeah, this might be one of the better weather rounds, weather games for this round. So, I mean, like I said, Val trading him in and captaining him might be my play. Drinky, if there's a game he's going to go massive in, this is a prime option there. The Titans they've never been good against fullbacks, especially this year. They've just been bad everywhere. So, Titans, you know, on track for the spoon at this stage. Anybody else you'd throw the armband on? I mean, you know, let's talk back to Tommy Did, and is he still there?
Yeah, he's still there. But as we spoke, right, he's averaging low 60s with three tries. Can I put the armband on him? But at the moment, I still do. But I've got the blue one on Paps and just hoping for the best.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, to be fair, like, he has a career 179, right, against the Tigers last year. So he does have a ceiling. But aside from that game, the only other high score he's got that's over 100 was actually against the Panthers, scoring 118. So he's not a guy that turns up too often, and I guess that might be some of the reservation I have. I think he's got 109 against the Broncos in 2022, but outside of that, it does take a lot for him to, you know, hit triple figures, and I think that's the upside you're going to be chasing. Whereas I know, you know, Val and Drinky, they've turned up for fun many times over the past couple of years. So, yeah, I think Dearden's a little bit too risky for my liking. And final game, Raiders and the Eels. I'm not sure there's really a captaincy option here. Like, normally I'd always throw Dillbags in there because he's safe for a 50 plus any attacking stats on top of that. But that's not really the case this year. Like, I don't feel like we've got a safe 50 in Dillbags. He's more of a safe 35, and that's about it, unless he gets some attack. So, yeah, a bit disappointing. Any other names that perk up there?
Nah, I think an interesting one is, sorry, just to circle back to the Cowboys. Look, if you're going to spend 800K or above on Drinky or Value and you're trading them in this week, you're probably throwing the armband on them. If you say you didn't own either and you had to bring in one, obviously with duels, look, there's a bit of flexibility there. Who would you be bringing in?
I feel like it's going to be Val, just because most likely, unless you've just, you know, run dirt at fullback or your fullbacks have gotten hurt or suspended, I think most likely you've got some really good options at fullback anyway. And yeah, I tend to think most likely you're probably upgrading your team by bringing in Val at center wing. And, you know, he's got such a safe floor. He's been playing poorly and still hitting respectable scores. So yeah, the upside is certainly there for Val. So I'm leaning him out of the two.
Yeah, I'd have to agree.
All right. So I guess to recap, you said you got the vice captaincy on Pappenhausen, and then you've also got the captaincy potentially on Dearden, or you're just hoping it's going to be, you know, you can captain Nico or something like that, right?
Very much so. Very much so. Otherwise, there's about 10 guys. There's Dearden, there's Pierce Paul you've just shown in there. There's even Papali'i. Look, he could be a safe 50, but yeah, look, I'm in all sorts, Will, to be honest with you. I need Paps to go bigger. We're in all sorts.
Fair enough. And then I will, on my end, I think I'm probably going to throw the VC on, say, Ponga or something like that. Maybe Dom Young if the weather looks half respectable. And then I will just stick the C on Val Holmes, who probably is coming into my team this week. The more I talk about, the more I'm locking that one in. So, yeah, I think that's where I'm going to be. All right, that's enough captaincy chat there. Let's jump over to some strategy discussion.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
All right, so the first talking point here, I think you alluded to it yesterday, but earlier in this episode, that was the idea of trading out a fullback based on matchups, right? Can you throw up the conundrum that you're wrestling with at the moment?
Yeah, it was. I'm definitely getting rid of Mulitalo, and through duels, it's meaning I'm bringing in a fullback. And look, Paps is minus six break even and a decent matchup this week, and not too bad running forward. And Pong is obviously not walking into so much cash, but they've got the Dragons and then a decent run. So look, I was very unsure as to which way I'd go, and you swung me towards Paps yesterday. Were you still same train of thought there?
I still think so, just based off the weather, potentially, like this round, the way the scoring has been. As much as, you know, obviously I'm expecting Ponga to potentially still go well, but, you know, if you're looking at the price tag and the break-evens and also just, you know, the matchups moving forward, I do think Pappenhausen's the guy I would lean towards. Just the way the teams are traveling, like the Storm is still playing well and they're getting troops back, whereas the Knights just still seem like they're struggling. They haven't quite hit their straps. You know, O'Brien is shuffling his halves again. Just seems like there's a lot of uncertainty there, as much as Pong is still probably going to get it done because he's just that good. But Pappenhausen just seems a lot more safer between the two there. But I think that brings me to the broader point of just shuffling these fullbacks, right? Fullback roulette is a real thing. You know, people did it to great success in previous seasons. And I just you know, I've seen a lot of people go from, you know, they risked trading out Ponga because he was mediocre to start with. He had the high break even. You had Latrell, who'd been hot for a bit. You had Reece Walsh, who was just blitzing it despite the Broncos not playing well. Everything was going through him. You know, some people played with fire. Like, I saw a lot of Ponga to Walsh, Ponga to Latrell, Ponga to Teddy, just wild trades like that. And I think it's fair to say that that's definitely backfired, right? Ponga's just blitzed it since most people trading him out. Sorry, not most people. Since a lot of people who traded him out that round, they've just copped it since then. What are your thoughts on the idea of playing, you know, fullback roulette this year?
I like it. I'm a huge fan of fullback and center wing roulette. I remember speaking a fair bit to it when I did have success, which is many moons ago. But you've got to accept that it's not always going to go right. Like, you, it's easy to, when you get it right, you think, oh, look, I know exactly what I'm talking about. And then when you get it wrong, you just want to curl up in the fetal position. But if you're going to play it for the whole year, look, except you're going to get some wrong. The Ponga one was interesting. Like, only two rounds had gone by. Has enough changed from the whole 2 months of preseason? You obviously wanted him in there. Look, glass houses, right? I traded him out and regretted it. But yeah, going too early on people is maybe ill-advised, but find a run of matchups and bring him in.
Yeah, and like, so maybe let's stick with that example because I think it's a good one to talk through, because the rationale was, you know, high break even, coming up against the Storm, and then the Warriors in the following round, like two of the, you know, in 2023, two of the toughest defenses outside of the Panthers and the Broncos. So it absolutely made sense on paper. But I think it was more a matter of, well, you know, what had been going wrong for the Knights? Did they, you know, was anything changing for them? And I think, you know, O'Brien was making adjustments, right? The team had changed and it was potentially going to be better for him overall. Like, you certainly weren't alone in trading him out. Like, his ownership went from 35.3 to 23.4 from rounds 2 to 3. So that's a whole lot of people trading out Ponga. And obviously, I would suspect, you know, 12, 13% of Supercoach regret that, because he went on to score 86 and 117 next two rounds. So I think it's a really interesting point, because, you know, that therein lies the danger, right? But then you could all argue that, well, if you took the plunge and traded out, say, maybe Tommy Turbo, right, who similarly started off, you know, okay, like 81 and 54, but it wasn't massive scores that we were hoping for. And then round three, he scored 86 and then 55. So his ownership actually didn't change. And in fact, it went up in round four for the Dragons game. But yeah, it's an interesting one. I wonder if, you know, because Turbo was just, so many of us still remember what he did in 2021. And so many people looked at how he was playing. Like, he was passing the eye test massively until basically round four, where he played one of his worst games of his career, I put out there. It's a really interesting talking point, because I don't think there's a solution here. I do lean with you where it's a viable strategy that a lot of people have used to great success, but we've seen perfect examples so far this year where it's just backfired big time. Not to, you know, drag anybody through the mud, but some people who started off with Teddy, you know, awesome pick, right? But they got cute. Like, 17 people traded out Teddy in round three, just before he played the Rabbitohs, and yeah, decided to switch to Turbo or something like that. And then Teddy went on to score 135 that round. It's interesting. Again, you know, people are trying to play fullback roulette after, you know, they've gotten it right. They've gotten the 70 and the 103. Things were trending in the right direction. Teddy looked fantastic, and then they got rid of him just when he went bang and hit that massive score there. Obviously, he dropped in round four against the Panthers, but that's the Panthers, and he scored 47, and he's got a massive matchup now against the Bulldogs. Might be weather that holds him back, but I would not be surprised if he still scores 100+, despite how wet it might be, because Teddy is, you know, he looks really, really good this year. So I guess maybe what I want to kind of segue into my next talking point for consideration this week, it's the idea of, you know, are we getting a little bit too trade happy? I know I've just been, you know, I've spent two boosts, I'm about to get into my third, I haven't saved any trades. So after this round, if I make another three, I'll be down to 35 trades. that feels a little bit scary. You know, we started off with so many and ready in five rounds down, and I'll be like chewed through a quarter of my trades already. I mean, you're at what, two boosts going on three as well, or?
Yeah, yep, three boosts. This will be my third boost and then the 36 trades. It's right. It's easy to use them while you got them, and it's fun and lighthearted, but yeah, you can get dire round 20 when you've only got six trades left and you got half a team.
And the reason I want to talk about this, because it's been a really interesting talking point in the Champs Discord today. Like, a lot of people have been thinking about it. You know, the idea of, you know, yes, we got to use trades, and a lot of us have been burning trades to get rid of injuries, right? When you've been hit with the injury stick, you got to adjust. Like, that's a given. You can't just sit there and hold guys who are out for multiple weeks, especially guys who are really expensive, just because you think, well, you know, I'm trying to save trades. Like, that just doesn't work. But it's more the discretionary kind of trades where, I guess, fullback roulette fully falls into that category, right? You know, I guess you could argue my trade of Dylan Brown last week. He's healthy. He's playing. He's not gone disastrous. Like, it's not what I wanted. It's not what I expected when I got him. But I still think it was worth the trade of going him to Galvin. Not because Dillbags was a poor trade out. It was more how good Galvin was as a trade in. I think that's the line I had there for me. Like, I mean, do you have any thoughts on that particular trade?
No, I think you're absolutely right. Like, Galvin was just too good not to trade in. And the difference in price does not equal the difference in performance. Whereas, like, when you've got some guys that you're, all the fullbacks, the elite fullbacks, they're all equal in price and somewhat equal in performance. So, you're just throwing the hats in the air and hoping the right one falls on your head, I guess.
Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, it's about how you can keep improving your team. If you're trading hard, like, you've got to still make your team better, whether that's like you're just trading for the sake of trading because you think you'll get more points this way. That's, again, I'm throwing back to fullback roulette. I think the idea is you need to make sure you're balancing, you know, that you're trading out a guy for high break even to a guy who's got a negative break even. So this is where I'm thinking, like, maybe a trade of, say, Turbo to Ryan Pappenhausen would make sense for certain teams. Like, I could legitimately get around that because, again, you're thinking Turbo could score a 60 and you'd be happy with that against the Panthers. But Pappenhausen could go 100+. And even if he goes 80 and Turbo scored 60, it might feel like a waste of a trade, but the cash difference there mixed in with, yeah, you get an extra 20, 30 points or whatever, it might actually still pay off. I think that's where I would differentiate between someone who's just going, you know, like, I guess, yeah, Ponga with a tough matchup, but thinking, like, you're going to a guy who's not really got a negative break even. He's still a lowish break even, like maybe a 40 or 50, where you'd expect him to beat that. But it's not such a home run in terms of cash balance generation, whatever you want to call it. The swings need to be worth the trades, I think, because then you need to be freeing up the coin, making the coin back, as well as using the coin elsewhere and improving your team in other areas. I hope that makes a bit of sense.
No, it absolutely does, right? It and you can get caught up in a 50 break even and think, well, especially for these elite guys, right? You think, oh, Poponga can go 120, and if he's projected as 120 or whatever it might be, it can be tempting, but he can quite easily go 45 and the cash gen is completely stunted. So I think that's where Paps is very different this week, like a -6. All he's got to do is put his boots on, he's fine, right?
Yeah, and the way he's been playing, like, put his boots on and just get through his normal work and he's going to make a decent chunk of coin plus probably score better than most options that you're trading to him. I guess to go away from fullback chat for a bit, like, I think maybe for some of us, you know, Taylor May, right, started off hot, is already losing cash. He's worth less than what you purchased him for round one, and he still plays for the Panthers, but he's got to buy next round. You know, there's been some discussions on, you know, is he a trade out? Is that a luxury trade? And I guess this comes back to the question of who is he going to? For me, Talon may leave my team this week. He's going to go to Val Holmes. That to me is, I still think it's a worthwhile trade. I mean, I don't have to trade Talon. I could trade someone else. But if I'm not going to have Talon next week and I'm not expecting a big score from him this week, You know, like I kind of think it might not be a choice to trade him out if I'm going to get a keeper who's going to score this week, next week, and so on. I don't know. Like, does that match up to you, or do you think it's a bit too luxury?
Look, I think it's, as you say, the only two possible options I could trade Taylan to would be Val or Blaze for two very different reasons, but reasons you've already spoke to. To me, I'm pretty high on Taylan May. Like, again, you said this, he plays for the Panthers. The only thing that's, well, nothing's really changed for me from the start of the season when I remember writing, I think it was an article somewhere, I said, if you don't own Taylan May, delete the app and start again. But maybe I oversold that a little bit. But nothing's changed except they played two games where centre on the other side got hurt and Isaac Tango became like Mal Meninga. And so look, back to a bit of normality. I'm hoping Taylan can be a keeper and be my fourth centre wing. So I'm holding, but I can see the Val or maybe the Blaze as being the only viable option.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. And I guess that's where you gave the example of you either go to a locked-in rookie who's going to make a bucketload of cash and potentially could score, you know, almost similarly to Taylan in some respects. I mean, maybe I'm overselling Talangi, but to me, you know, a centre wing who's bottom dollar with a negative 55 break-even but also will score, you know, his base is hitting around 40s and he's playing in the halves. Like, that's a massive upside for most players, especially a team like the Eels, that they have a lot of good players who can score points. So that seems like a really good option to me. And then on the other extreme, you know, you're paying up to the most expensive centre wing, basically, who's got a fantastic matchup and is absolutely captain worthy. I think that's where Taylan probably can be expendable for some people. I guess where, you know, to flip it around, like, you're probably staying away from trades like Taylan to like a Justin Olam. Yes, it's a negative 40 break even, but you're going from, you know, a 400K guy to a 400K guy. And yeah, maybe you could argue the Tigers are a superior team at the moment, but I wouldn't go that far. Yeah, I kind of think that that's the trade where you definitely don't want to do that one if, you know, Taylan should stay in your team for that purpose. All righty. I guess to round off that discussion, I think, you know, one thing we do want to remember is how bad last year was at the end of the season, right? The trades we're burning happily now will come back to haunt us. Like, that's a given. We're all going to get to the end of this year and just be like last year. Like, where did all our trades go? Why are we like this? And why have I got 14 on the park in round 27 or whatever and no trades left to fix it? I think we do have to remind ourselves consistently about that. But at the end of the day, like, if we're not somewhat in, we still need to get points on the park. We still need to build value. We still need to get our team to, you know, make the cash as well as not leave ourselves too far behind. We saw it's definitely a viable strategy to conserve trades, hit the boost at the end, and just absolutely smash round 27. Like, again, I'm going to throw back to Cam. Cam Span, who hit like a 16.38 in round 27 and went from like the 400s or something like that to 13th overall in the final round. So it's a viable strategy, but you still got to get yourself around there, right? You still need to be in the top 1K to still have a massive surge at the end. Otherwise, you're going to leave your run too late. And I think that's the difficulty. Like, you know, you could argue, yes, if you're in the 50,000s or, you know, like us, like me, rather, you're not quite as poorly going as poorly as I am. If you're, you know, in the high 70s or 80s or 90s like Joe, you just got to go hard. Like, otherwise, you're going to leave yourself way too far behind. You know, there's many reasons that you're probably struggling like you are. Like, I'm just going to face it. Like, I've just been chasing my tail, trading out injuries after injuries, suspensions. Like, it's just happening left, right, and center. I am literally cursed. I genuinely believe that this year. So look out, Val Holmes. Look out, Blaze Talangi. You guys are in trouble. But, hey, I got to play Supercoach the way I'm going to still play it. Just if obviously the player's getting hurt, it just, yeah, I can't help that, unfortunately. Apologies in advance.
I think, like, there's some key times, right? You should want to break the season down into some areas. The first couple of weeks, and I'd consider we're probably just on the brink of period one to period two, right? We'll call period one just completely trying to fix the people you missed and the people you didn't want to start with, right? And then you get into the period, it's somewhat of a lull between that and preparation for the first buy round. I think that's the key time to save trades. Obviously, leading into round 13, you've got to start building your squad, sort of maybe call it round 10, 11, 12, up to there. But between, look, basically to give us the free round to boost this week, let's call it between round 6 and round 8, I think that's the time where you can really be, frugal when it comes to trades. But look, let's just give it one more week of hitting our team hard and save trades next week, eh?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Like, and we talked about this earlier when we looked at the cheapies, right? The fact is there's not many on the horizon. We might get Willison next week. Iro might be there if he hangs around for a little bit. But otherwise, it's really subpar options or no options at all. So you're going to, the cash gen's going to dry up. You're going to end up playing a little bit with the side-to-side trades where you're swapping the guy who's hit the peak for a guy who's, finally bottomed out and surely should go back up. And, that's where I'm thinking at some point someone's going to trade in Reece Walsh after his one rolls out of his school and he's going to be on the up and he's going to have a nice little run. The Broncos do have a nice draw coming up pre-Origin. So that's going to be a penciled in trade that you might want to look at. But outside of that, you're probably saving trades. You're probably avoiding, just going sideways as much as you can and really looking for those opportunities of like we said, the swings where, cashing out at a peak and bringing in a guy who's bottomed out and just trying to swing as many of those where you're doing two things with one trade, basically. So, yeah. All right. Thanks, Matt. Plenty of good chat there. I think we're going to have to leave that one there for this evening. Otherwise, we could go, I'll ramble on. So, yeah.
I wouldn't call it rambling, Wilf. When you've got that much information in your head, you've got to get it out there, right?
No, that's fair. All right, so we've talked about our trades, or at least, our trade options here. We talked about advice captains, and, we've kind of caught up a little bit on the chumps bet that we made. I feel like I was pushed into backing Teddy for under 75, and obviously you are very firmly on the overs. So he's sitting at 88.8 right now, and I'm terrified that he's going to double that this week against the Bulldogs. But, this is where I'm praying for some rain. But not too much that my Dom Young winger doesn't get any meat pies. I think this is the beauty about Supercoach, right? You're hoping for good things for your players, but bad things for everyone else.
It's so Goldilocks, right? So Goldilocks.
Yeah, perfect. I love that. All right. I think we'll finish up here for this evening. Thanks for jumping on again. We'll catch you again in a couple of weeks, but good luck this week. And we'll talk to you all again soon.